Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, we are going to be talking about something that's kind of long overdue. I think our listeners know that we are probably surprised that we're just now getting to this topic. In fact, that's what Jackie said. She says, God, I'm surprised you haven't talked about this yet, which is aliens, extraterrestrials, and life on other planets, and all that kind of stuff. Woo-hoo. Aliens. So, Donald, why don't you lead us into aliens and such?
They're scary. No, I'm teasing.
Depending on which ones. Yeah.
For me, one of the overwhelming ideas of extraterrestrials comes from an idea that I saw, I think, on the History Channel a few years ago. Basically, what it said was that throughout history, there's always been belief in a higher existence that's not necessarily the divine. With the Egyptians, you know, the gods were gods, but they weren't kind of like the divine, supreme divine beings that we're kind of looking at them now, where it's like God is everything and does everything and is everywhere at every time. You know, they were just more of a you do what we say or we kill you. And like, we don't want to die. And like, I know, so you do what we say. And like, okay, you're God, whatever. That's an oversimplistic way of looking at it. Going along those lines, they brought it to the point of, well, yeah, when we started getting, a lot of technology and stuff that, you know, 100 years ago, it was like, yeah, we're never going to be able to do that. And then all of a sudden we're doing that. What's the only other thing that we can do is like life on other planets or something like that. And so it's like, well, if there's life on other planets, they probably have transportation and they're probably more advanced than we are. So maybe they are able to visit Earth. So I think that's kind of one way to look at it. But then, of course, there's the other way to look at it, as the universe and is a very big place. And who's to say that, you know, we are the center of that and the only place that could ever hold life out of millions and billions of solar systems and planets and stars and stuff. So that's kind of my quickie take on it.
I think I've asked you this in other episodes, if you believe that there are actual life on other planets.
Oh, yeah. Life on other planets. I totally believe in that.
Now, do you believe that some of that life from other planets is visiting our planets?
Sort of, maybe.
So what part of you gives credibility to it and what part of you is skeptical?
The part of me that gives credibility to it is, if you look at the sheer number of planets and solar systems and stars in the whole universe, it seems that it would be really unusual that we would be the only planet in the universe that has any intelligent life. When you look around just our planet, and there's thousands and thousands of different types of life, you know, from mammals to sea life to, you know, all kinds of insects and everything else. And to believe that that couldn't happen in any way, shape, or form in any other planet throughout the other billions of planets and stars and solar systems in the universe, I think it's just kind of a very ignorant way of looking at it. And so for me, that's where I believe that. With aliens and extraterrestrials visiting our planet, that's where I'm just like, I don't know, because some of the topics we've talked about in the past is like extra dimensions and stuff like that. And what if what we consider extraterrestrials is more of beings on a higher level of existence that are basically phasing into our universe as opposed to visiting from another planet?
Let me ask you this. What would you qualify as a higher existence?
What we talked about before, where we have a higher vibrational rate, where
but you're implying it is higher, not that it's different or that it's lower. That's very, you're very specific about it being higher.
I see what you're saying. That's because I assume that lower frequency beings and energies would not be able to phase into our reality at the way that reports of UFOs and extraterrestrials have from our perception. They would look different. They would come in differently, if at all. You know, we live in a three-dimensional world, and what we'd look like to a two-dimensional world would, beings on a two-dimensional world would be like, oh, wow. We can actually move on the, not only the X and Y axis, but also the Z. And it would look like whenever we, like if we stuck our finger through that two-dimensional plane, it would look really weird to a two-dimensional being, because it looked like it started and then it just disappeared. That's what I mean when I'm talking about beings from possibly traveling from higher dimensional realities to here, kind of like we're third dimension and they might be fourth, fifth, sixth, 120th, I don't know, dimension, and they phase in and be like, oh, look, okay, we're
done.
You
know what, I've always found it interesting, whenever you listen to people that describe having seen a UFO, one of the most interesting descriptions I ever heard of the way the UFO would come into appearance and recede from appearance is somebody had said it looked like it was moving at right angles to itself.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like it was moving, but in a way, it didn't look like it was moving, you know, if that makes any sense. So, in other words, people saw it receding from completely different angles, but it looked like it was moving in the same direction away from them, even though they're at different angles. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Kind of like in all the movies, or most of the movies that you see, whenever a ship is going up into outer space, it always goes straight up, and then all of a sudden it flips off to like a right angle.
Yeah, kind of, sort of. The better way I could say it is, say you and I are standing 100 feet apart from each other.
Okay.
Let's say there was a car, and I saw the car moving away from me, but you might see the car moving toward you.
Oh.
Where the way it was described was, is you have two people that are watching this car, but the car seems to be moving away from them in the same direction at the same time, which doesn't make any sense as far as the laws of physics and our perception goes.
So the car in your example would look like it's moving away from me, and from me, it looked like it'd be going away from me, and from you, it looked like it'd be going away from you, even though we're both like a significant distance away from each other.
Right, exactly.
Okay, oh, okay, I see what
you're saying. And the reason I bring that up is because it to me, if there's a craft that any sort of extraterrestrial visitor would use, if it was technologically based, which kind of takes me to something else, is that the craft they would use would be functioning in this kind of mechanics of traveling in between dimensions, or kind of outside of our particular laws of physics or thermodynamics.
Since you mentioned traveling, let's look at ways that beings from another planet could travel and show up here. For me, kind of from our perspective on technology, our technological perspective, as it were, you know, we're used to, we have a starting point, we have an ending point, and then we use some means to get from one place to the other, and walking takes a while, riding a bike not as much, driving a car less time, and then flying in a plane even less time. I think a lot of concepts go, you know, kind of fall around there. The distance between any other planet out there that has technologically advanced life would take forever to get from there to here, just by, you know, going over that level of space. And then people was like, well, how could they do it otherwise? Well, then we came up with ideas of hyperspace and warp drive and all this other stuff. What we've been talking about for the past few minutes is phasing in from a other dimension or something like that. So I'm kind of interested on your take on that, since you brought it up.
Well, there's a lot of theories on that. The first one is that it's dependent on a technology that is not dependent on travel through space and time in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. Like when you said riding a bicycle, you're still using a mechanical apparatus to traverse time and space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where these crafts are not working on a principle of time and space, that they're actually using the notion that if matter is really mostly space, mm-hmm. if matter is really mostly just emptiness and then the rest of it is energy, that they're using that same idea, that you're just energetically shifting, that you're changing, like we talked about in another episode, I think it was in the multiverse, we might have talked about it, where we talked about different frequencies We talked about the Schumann resonance and all that other stuff. Well, maybe it's that. Maybe there's a certain resonance that they have to attune themselves to, or maybe it's just a matter of just changing a focus.
Or like in Frank Herbert's Dune, where they warp space, mm-hmm. where they physically fold it over where they want to go, and they grab those two pieces of space, make them touch, and then put the ships through them, and there they go.
Right, exactly. But here's the thing about that is, and I'm going to get a little tangential here.
Go
but
for it.
If space is just emptiness, if it's emptiness, then what are we traversing?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Here in our atmosphere, we're saying, yeah, there's oxygen molecules and all this other stuff. What are we really traversing if it's really a bunch of nothingness? If it's really a bunch of space? If it's really a bunch of nothingness, if it's truly a vacuum, then what are you traversing?
Because it's hard to move without some kind of way to move.
No, I'm taking it even one level deeper. I'm not talking about the mechanics of moving. I'm talking about if I put my hand against the wall and I say, what's between my hand and the wall? And you said, there's nothing between your hand and the wall. Your hand is against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing between your hand and the wall. If there is nothing in space, then what's the separation? You see what I'm saying?
Are you saying that our whole reality is basically the space between someone's hand and their wall?
Well, pretty much. yeah, you could say that, I would say. But perhaps this whole thing is kind of a level of an illusion.
Uh-huh.
And the space is just really just kind of where things wait to happen. What if someone just figured out all we have to do is just go from one energy well to another energy well? If there's nothing to cross, if there's nothing in between one star and another, why don't we just take that to our advantage? If there is nothing in between, then really there's nothing stopping us from going from one place to another. And they just figured out how to traverse that idea, how to embrace that idea.
Oh, yeah. Then the whole distance is no longer a matter. That reminds me of an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, where Q was messing with Picard, and there was a whole thing there like, humanity, you're so pompous and everything, you don't know what is out there, and you have not even met some of the dangers that are out there. And this was the one where Q makes the Enterprise go tons and tons of light years away. I think, I don't remember exactly how much. It was quite a few thousand. That was the first time that they were introduced to the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
When you were describing what you were describing, I was just like, here is a being that in just a matter of moments was able to move a craft from one point in space to another point in space somehow.
Mm-hmm.
If there's kind of like the science behind it, kind of like what you're talking about, where you figured out how to do that, then yeah, you could traverse the whole universe just by using these physics to go from one point to the other, and like, I want to go that way.
Mm-hmm. What we're also talking about here is we're also talking about extraterrestrials or aliens or whatever you want to call them that are dependent on technology for travel to our realm, to our dimension or our planet. There are ideas out there that there are extraterrestrials that are in visitation or are in communication with us that are not using a vehicle such as a technological craft, per se.
And they leave messages. They leave messages in crop circles.
Crop circles and
yeah,
whatnot?
In crop circles. You know, they're like, Donald was here. You know, the aliens leave like, we were here. We can't understand what it was, but it's kind of, so any other alien comes by like, oh, hey, Johnny was here.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that they were talking about as far as visitation, another way of visiting, is that it's really kind of a parallel aspect of time.
Mm-hmm.
That the idea is that the visitors were not necessarily from another planet or another galaxy, but another future timeline or something like that.
Oh, yeah, basically us throwing ourselves back through time and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That it's kind of a future version offshoot that went back in time.
That kind of goes back to our parallel lives and parallel worlds discussions that we've had through our podcast, where do you think that we get to a point in our advancement technologically or spiritually or whatever where we can actually visit back in the past of what would be yours and my now, but our future selves past.
Our future self. Say that again.
Let's go way, way, way. Let's say the year 2600. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that that is happening and is a good explanation where humanity is able to move itself back to this time and, you know, this time and space where we're able to see them as UFOs and extraterrestrials, when actually in like 2600, or even we can go further and say like the year 4000, you know, they're traveling back into time to this time and we see them as UFOs or, and extraterrestrials, when in actuality they're just humanity 2000 years in the future.
Yeah, who knows? I would say it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know about all that so much. It's just kind of something that I've seen thrown out there before. But if you think about it, like if we take the Greys, which is one of the most popularized ideas of aliens, the little meat green men, except they're little gray men in this case, and they vary in size and shape. But when you look at that, there's been discussions of these particular types of aliens that go as far back as we know our civilization to have gone. You've seen this been indicated in some of the Egyptian mythologies, and no, the Egyptians I might be confusing with the Nibiru, which we mentioned. Yeah, I'm sorry, the Sumerian, the crafts themselves have been indicated like by the Sumerian drawings or whatever you want to call them, pictures and things like that. So you got to wonder if these crafts are showing up, the same crafts that we see several thousand years ago compared to now. Are these guys really living that long, or are they just kind of going from the same place to different points in time in human history?
Kind of like a year for them is like millennia for us.
No, not like that. Or well, actually, like, maybe it is like that. Who knows? Maybe their lifespan and their concept of time is completely different than ours.
Yeah, kind of like a whole idea of a government issue type thing where, all right, we have so many people that are going back in the past and like, you're going to the 2500 BC, you're going to 2000 BC, you're going to 4000 BC, you're going to 1800 AD, and they all leave from their perspective, you know, they all leave and come back within, what, like a day, but for us it spans our whole human history.
Right, or they just have a mastery of that kind of time-space. If time and space are intertwined, when you travel through space, then you should be able to travel through time to that degree. If you can warp space, you can warp time.
And that goes back to our whole talk on time not being linear.
Right, exactly.
And if you can actually warp space, then you can warp time to where both of them connect at a certain point, either in your past or future. Distance would no longer be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that brings up a really interesting idea of, you know, basically humanity creating humanity. Where basically, let's say at some point in our future, we're able to traverse time and space and we come back to the beginnings of the Homo sapien back in, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. However, we got back there, we're, you know, ship crashed or we're unable to get back to our normal time. All of a sudden, we start a whole Homo sapien species.
Interesting. That's kind of an interesting place that you're taking that.
Yeah, kind of like, to put it in more simplistic terms, it's like you going back into time and being your grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Fry is?
Yeah, on the Futurama.
On Futurama, yeah. Fry is his own grandfather, which is awesome. Yeah.
That kind of a concept where we wouldn't exist unless we already existed and went back and created us, but since we wouldn't have existed anyway, then we create a paradox of we wouldn't exist unless we had already existed.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole thing's a paradox. I mean, we've gone down the paradox rabbit hole, and you know me, I'm like, I'm good for a good paradox.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna disclude it just because it reeks of paradox.
Me neither.
I want to go back to this whole Nibiru thing.
Okay.
Because we talked about that, and that is part of the whole Egyptian mythology. And
that's a bunch of mythologies.
You mentioned the... What's that?
I think that's part of a many mythologies.
The Nibiru?
Yeah.
So what's your understanding of the Nibiru?
I think I mentioned this in the conspiracies, one of the conspiracy episodes, where basically a race, their planet, comes close to our planet in every 3,600 years or so, and they needed gold for their atmosphere because, I don't know, that part I never understood, but, you know, whatever. And so they mined a lot of the gold, but they didn't want to do it themselves because, you know, who wants to get their hands dirty if they don't have to? So they genetically created, you know, basically the Homo sapien race from indigenous life that was already here and gave us enough intelligence so that we would be able to work the machinery and, you know, take orders and learn language, but not so intelligent that we'd be... you know, be able to be like, hey, wait a second. Why do you get to sit up in your palaces while we do all the hard work? Unfortunately, that's what happened, but kind of like, you know, oh, yeah, we're smart enough to realize we don't like working for you anymore. We're not going to do it. We're going to go over here and like, oh, man, we lost more workers. Well, okay, let's dumb them down even more and find that perfect place where they don't want to revolt and go off and do their own thing. This created different types of humans throughout the whole that basically became humanity, as it were. This whole workforce to mine this gold for this atmosphere, for this planet Nibiru.
And it takes them that long? Boy, we would have had to work fast if gather enough to sustain them for 3,600 years. Or a little goes a long way, one of the two. I don't know which it is.
Yeah, and, you know, from what I've read and what I've looked at over the years, you know, it's basically, they do talk about how, for them, 3,600 years is not as long as it is to us. Mm-hmm. Like, 3,600 years to them is like a few years. But for us, it's, you know, like 3.5 millennia. Well, let's look this way. How often does Earth line up with Venus in its closest orbits? You know, it might be something like that, where, you know, for us it's every few years. If we were on Venus, it might be ages and ages and ages. So that's my take on the whole Nibiru thing.
I always find it interesting what the motives would be of, like, we talked about this in the conspiracy episode too, like the Greys. I mean, I had read once upon a time that the idea of the Greys is that they're very much about genetic manipulation and that they don't really have any emotional basis. So really all the experimentation that they do on human beings is really, it's like lab experiments. I mean, it's like we're mice in lab experiments, and but yet that they kind of consume emotional energy, like fear and all this other stuff, as a drug and all this other stuff. I mean, there are people under hypnosis that will swear that they've been through this, but I also wonder if it's kind of an analogy of sorts of just kind of the human condition.
I've heard kind of a different take on that whole idea of, basically, if you go back to Atlantis and Lemuria, that the Greys were basically creating a Merkaba, and I think I've mentioned this before, and a Merkaba is basically a way to travel through time and space, and there's basically two ways to do it, where one is more technologically based and one is more heart based, emotionally based. One of the ideas is kind of like the Greys are the descendants of the Atlanteans that decided to create a Merkaba on a more technologically based system. Problem with that is, over time, they lost their emotional bodies, their ability to have emotions, and so that now they're here around in this area, in this time frame, and they're like, oh, we have a lot of people with a lot of strong emotions. Well, we need emotions back, and they're finally ripe enough to have the type of emotions that we should be able to reintegrate into ourselves. And so let's try to do hybrids, or let's try to genetically fuse their genes with our genes, and, you know, try to get our emotions back, because, you know, the whole idea is now they've realized that their technological Merkaba can only take them so far. They can only do so much, and now they need the other piece of the emotional part to move further, move faster, move, you know, go beyond where they've been. And so their whole evolution is kind of stunted until they get this emotional aspect back into their whole genome. And this information comes from, it was either Bob Frisell's book, Nothing in This Book is True, But It's Exactly How Things Are, and Drunvalo McKesdick's Flower of Life series.
The Walk-In.
Yeah. That's one idea that I've heard from with the Greys in that respect.
Well, interesting that you say that, because if that's the case, we're talking about a good 10, 12,000 years ago, which would imply that if people are getting visitations from Greys now, that there is an aspect of time-space travel, that they are traveling through space, but actually they're traveling more through time than they are through space.
Mm-hmm.
So that really, it sounds to me more like the Greys are from an alternate timeline rather than the future, or rather than from another planet.
Yeah, and I can see all those happening as well. There's also supposed to be some connection where they were what was life on Mars in the past. Mm-hmm. This is another piece that sometimes gets thrown in, but I don't know how I feel about it at the moment. So,
are you talking about the Mars and Maldek thing?
Yeah, where basically the whole idea of, you know, creating their technologically based Merkaba on Mars was basically destroyed the planet or phased it out to where we can't see it, and there's actually still life there. It's in a different octave of reality from where we are.
That's actually a basis for Stranger in a Strange Land, that story written by Robert Heinlein. Or it's not a story, it's actually a novel, but and it's written way back in the 70s or something. Yeah, there was a gentleman that came to Earth that they found on Mars. It was a human raised by Martians. I think the Martian Chronicles also alluded to this, that the Martians were living. They were there. They had a whole civilization there that was kind of dying out, but yet human beings had no idea that there was a civilization, that we would be there, and nothing seemed to be there, but then yet something. There's all sorts of great stories, and you got to wonder if those fictions. Remember, you talked about this in an episode. You talked about sometimes do you wonder if fiction comes from a little gleaning of an insight into what's possible, into maybe an edge of reality. And I wonder if things like the Martian Chronicles and Stranger in a Strange Land come from those ideas that there was a civilization that resided on Mars, or may still reside on Mars, that's just out of phase.
Mm-hmm.
But in our particular reality, or our particular timeline, or whatever you want to call it, or Schumann resonance, it seems like it's no good. Just like the whole Maldek idea, the asteroid belt that resides between Mars and Jupiter, that was another failed attempt at a civilization, and this time they took the whole planet down and blew it into smithereens.
Is that kind of the 10th planet idea, where there was originally 10 planets in the solar system instead of 9?
Or you could say 9 instead of 8, depending on how you look at Pluto. Pluto seems to be... Pluto's like the petulant step planet. It gets slapped around, you know? Nobody knows what to do with it. It's trying to find a foster home in our solar system, and it's not working out too well.
Okay, let's put it this way. If we were having this conversation 20 years ago, are you talking about the proverbial 10th planet?
Yeah, I am talking about...
before Pluto was... Scientists got to kind of saying, well, Pluto's not really a planet, so where
it's a planetoid.
It's a planetoid, yeah. Definitely a planetoid. Definitely a planetoid. In the Milky Way galaxy, yeah. Definitely in our solar system. We only have 8 planets now.
I feel like I need to push the tape, my taped glasses at the bridge of the nose, up my nose.
Got to rewrite all the science books now. We got it wrong. It was definitely wrong for 70
years.
Yeah,
I imagine that. We've never gotten anything wrong in science. I don't know how many times we've said in science, oh, no, wait a minute. But as far as the 10th planet thing goes, yeah.
Guess what? We were wrong. Can we have more money, please?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's why they don't mind being wrong, because they get paid.
We can't be right all the time. We'll do our whole life's work in 5 years, and then what would we do?
And then we're bored. We sit in Florida drinking mojitos or something. So in the 10th planet thing, yeah, I think that is something to do with the Maldek.
Okay.
Was the planet that did exist, and that there was a civilization there that was kind of their undoing and actually destroyed the whole thing. And again, I wonder if it's another reference to the Atlantean idea, which is a reference to kind of our potential of what we what could have become of us if we had kept escalating in our own violence.
Oh, yeah.
So there's that idea. There's also ideas about there are the Pleiadians, and there are the Orions, and then there's the reptiles, and there's, oh, God, there's just such a long list of alien, I guess you'd call them the cast of characters.
Yeah.
The whole alien lineup here seemed to be out there. And I'm not really well-versed on them, but it seems like there's also, kind of like what you alluded to, that there's visitations from different densities or dimensions or whatever you want to call them that actually are from different planets or solar systems, but yet they are not physical in nature.
The starseeds that we had mentioned earlier?
Well, the starseeds, or there's the whole idea of the elders or brotherhood of the Confederate. I can't remember. There's all sorts of ideas of it.
Yeah, basically what I've heard over the past, I think, 10, 15 years or so, is why there are so many different races being here on Earth now, and a belief in that they're not starseeds where they have just the spirit of extraterrestrial spirit or extraterrestrial race or whatever, but they are actually physically hidden to or made to look like us, but underneath they actually are physically extraterrestrial. One of the theories behind this that I've heard over the past 10 to 15 years is that from the genetic manipulation that happened with Nibiru and them coming down and, you know, messing with our DNA, we did not evolve the way that we should have. Then you get into this whole idea of this is just something that the universal United Nations, as it were, is basically like, that's bad. You don't mess with another species' evolution. And so basically, they had to...
Yeah, but what did the aliens do? Go, whoops, ba-da-ba-da-ba.
Yeah, but exactly. No, one of the ideas is that, all right, you all got to set it right. That's one of the things, one of the reasons why over the past few millennia, we've started to have so many prophets and, you know, really huge religious leaders come in to help to bring this consciousness, this belief system into our DNA, for our DNA memory, so that now we're at a point where it's shifted over and we started accelerating to where we're supposed to be, but then it's kind of like a rock that you roll down a hill. It goes so fast, and then you put boosters on it and it starts speeding up on its own, and then you add more boosters and you make the angle of the hill even, you know, steeper, and it goes faster and faster. From what I've heard is that this is kind of what's happening now, is they got us back to where we're supposed to be in our evolution, but they couldn't put the brakes on once they had started it, and they're like, oh, crap. And so now we're accelerating at such a rate that it hasn't happened anywhere ever. And so all these races are just like, oh, this is kind of interesting. It's like the American Idol of the whole universe. And there are all these races and beings and stuff that want to be a part of that, be like, I want to experience that. That'd be kind of cool. And so that's one idea of, you know, why there are so many races and so much interest in our little blue planet on the outskirts of the universe at the moment, or at least one of them that I've heard in the past 10 years.
Well, that's really kind of very human-centric idea that, well, let's all gather around the human beings because we're so special.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
of course.
I'm not to say we're not special, because we are special, but how special are we that all of a sudden it's like this is like the Super Bowl of planetary evolution, where everybody wants to get tickets to come see the, you know, human beings and what we do when, you know, 2011 wraps itself up, you know. I think a lot of things that we get, like the information that you're talking about that's just come to rise about the human evolution and the different races, because here's the thing that I always wonder about this. If there's this idea that human evolution has been encouraged by outside influences, that almost implies to me that we couldn't do it without some help. Then what I wonder is what about the people that did introduce the help? What about them? Did they get introduced help for them to get where they were? And so on and so on and so on. And who was the first person that, or first entity, or first aspect of existence that kind of threw its stuff into the mix to kind of get things going. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but I don't agree with that. What you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we cannot evolve without the help of others. Or some kind
of... Well, that's the implication here that...
Oh, no, no. See, I look at it completely different.
Well, okay. Like with the Greys and with the Nibiru and altering our DNA and all that other stuff and the various races being aspects of us extraterrestrials, that always implies there is an extraterrestrial hand in our evolution or in our level of consciousness, as it were.
Yeah, okay, so let me give you an example. There's a little lake somewhere out in the woods. It's teeming with life. You have all kinds of frogs and toads and fishies, and you have squirrels and chipmunks and, you know, all this stuff. It is pristine, has never been touched by any kind of technology for millions and millions of years. You know, all of a sudden you get this little tadpole that is born from eggs, becomes a tadpole, goes on with its life. The tadpole grows up, becomes a frog, you know, mates, lays more eggs, more tadpoles, etc. Now, you take one of those tadpoles, and it's a tadpole. It has certain characteristics. It has a certain way of, you know, being. It has a certain way of looking. You look at the DNA and chromosomes and genetic information underneath a microscope, and, you know, then you see that it has a certain structure. It has a certain form. Then you take that same tadpole, you put it in a water coolant offshoot of a highly radioactive nuclear plant for a few generations, and you see what happens to it. And then you compare those two tadpoles together, they're going to be different. And what I understood what you were saying is that if we are the tadpoles that have been in the radioactive muck for the past few generations and we've become what we've become, then it would not exist without having some kind of influence there. And I'm kind of saying, no, we'd still exist. We'd just be a little different. Does that make
sense? Well, it does make sense. You're saying that there's a specific way we are because of the influence.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying that it is the rate in which we've reached our evolutionary consciousness?
Yeah, basically, we would evolve regardless of influence or non-influence. It's just the final product would be different. It's just where we'd be in our evolution right now would be could be different. You know, if we had influence, our evolution would look a certain way, and it'd be very similar, but it'd look slightly different. And if we weren't messed with at all or anything like that, our evolution would be one way and look a certain way. I'm saying regardless of influence or no influence, we're going to evolve. And what I understood what you were saying is that we would not have continued to evolve without some kind of help.
No. That's not what I'm saying at all.
Okay.
What I was speculating on something that is often said, that like in the idea of the Nibiru or the Atlanteans, mm-hmm. or the Lemurians, that humanity had some kind of genetic influence placed upon it by intervening forces. For example, there's the idea that we actually have 12 strands of DNA, or which have been rendered dormant by these interfering races or creatures or whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying here is that then why do we introduce the aspect that we have had some sort of interference in the first place?
Hmm. You know, we could look at it a different way too, where Homo sapien is not native to the evolution of this planet. And basically we are the genetic equivalent to those who have visited the planet. They just basically shut off a whole bunch of their strands of DNA and dumbed themselves down and then had us be their workers or whatever, and few of us got free and, you know, mated with the native population, which I guess if we look back, it would probably be Neanderthal. Then evolved into what we are now. I mean, that's one way we could look at it too, but I see what you're saying now. I definitely misunderstood.
Yeah, and it was just a question I'm posing out there, because I do believe that there's been visitation. Uh-huh. I do believe that there's been visitation by more than one type of visitor from one place and time, I guess you'd say.
Oh, me too.
It seems to be the case. There's ideas, there's channeled ideas about the Egyptian gods, like you'd mentioned, that the Egyptian gods were actually with, you know, heads of ibises and heads of cats and all these things that are actually alien entities, specifically the Nibiru is one of the ones that are indicated, that had some less than stellar. Wow. But up.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, exactly.
Ding.
Less than positive motives, that they're pretty self-indulgent. Ideas of what to do with this. And then there's other ideas that there are visitors that visited, say, the Mayans or the Incans and such, that actually did have a lot more altruistic intentions. You know, there's different ideas of it, and I'm not surprised. I'd say, why is that impossible? Again, like I like to say, just because we can't prove it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Oh, you want a little bit of proof?
No, I don't need any proof. I don't think anybody needs any proof. Well, I think people do.
You don't need it, but would you like some?
Well, oh, you're going to talk about the things that point to the possibility that there were these visitations?
The biggest, the most strongest piece of evidence that has been documented over and over again that lends me to believe that there is life on other planets and that we've been visited by the life from other planets is the case of the Dogon tribe in Africa.
Mm, yes.
And I don't know if you've heard of them or not, but
yeah,
in their history, these beings came down, and from what they're referred to as, they looked kind of dolphin-ish, like dolphin-like.
I thought there was a frog.
Or frog. They looked amphibious in one way or another, and I don't know exactly what they look like, but I've heard that they look like dolphins, or they look like frogs, or somewhere in between, or whatever. But basically,
frogfins.
What's that?
Frogfins.
Dolphrogs. Dolphrogs.
Dolphrogs. Yeah.
But part of their history is that these beings came down, and they spent some time with them. They, you know, it's kind of like what's happening? Yeah, you know, we're just hanging out, evolving and stuff. Yeah, well, you all seem pretty cool. We're going to give you some information and sure, okay, you seem cool. Why not? You haven't killed us the moment you got out of your ship or whatever. So basically their ancestors that met these drew paintings on the walls and stuff of orbits of where they came from, where there's like a dual star, and it showed the progression of the evolution or the revolutions of the
of Sirius, Sirius A and B.
Yeah, Sirius A and B, and how they travel through and where they go throughout years and years and years of how, and these are painted on the walls, and the Dogon say, this is where they came from, this is what they told us. And these archaeologists go by and they like, oh, this is kind of cute. You know, they first met him, like, this tribe has these little paintings of what they think the world is and everything. And then they look at it and like, so this is not your belief. This is what you think is up in the stars. And one guy's like, well, okay, on a whim, let's see if we can find it. And they look up and like, oh, they look at that and like, well, okay, that seems to correlate pretty well. What else did they say on that? And then they found that the Sirius A and Sirius B actually revolve and move through space how they have on these walls. And it's just like, okay, the big question that everyone asks then is, how did this little tribe that basically their highest form of technology is woodworking, work for spears and stuff like that, be able to see these things that we have to use high-power telescopes for? Mm-hmm. At that point, it's like, what do you want to believe? Do you want to hold to the belief that, no, we are the only life in the whole universe, and or the distance between interstellar travel and meeting extraterrestrials couldn't happen? Or then how do you explain this? Did they have somebody that went up there and came back down? To me, that is the biggest piece of evidence that has been documented scientifically, archaeologically, all this other stuff, that says, yeah, we're not the only ones that have ever stepped foot on this planet.
I don't think that we need to be limited to the evidence either. You know, I say take everything with a grain of salt. Look at everything with wide open eyes, but don't digest everything you see either. I think there's a really good place in the middle for these kind of things. And I'm not saying, you know, buy into every single alien legend you say, but I'm saying, you know, just because you can't prove it, why dismiss it?
Yeah.
So I think there is a lot of merit to visitations. And what I wonder about really is kind of the means. You talked about the Merkaba, and from my understanding of Merkaba, when the energy field of the Merkaba is actually extended out, it resembles very much a flying saucer.
Oh, yeah.
There are aspects to these visitations and the mechanics behind them and the entities behind them that we can't explain and don't understand. How did they get here? We're going to say, well, we don't know how to cross light years, so that's to say it's not possible. There's a lot of things we do today that were not possible 500 years ago. We haven't stretched our understanding enough to be able to embrace and accept the possibility of it. But I really do believe, I really sincerely believe that it's going to be really difficult to deny the idea of life either from other planets or dimensions or galaxies or vibrations, whatever you want to call it. I do believe that not too long from now, very, very soon, it's going to be difficult to deny the plausibility of it. And I don't believe there's going to be this War of the Worlds thing where it's taken over and the only thing that's going to save us is smallpox. or the flu. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. I just think that it's going to be right in front of us, and I don't think there's anything that we need to be afraid of. I think it's just going to be like, oh, well, there's a no-brainer. To me, it's just like it'd be no different than discovering another species on our planet, like some kind of lizard in the rainforest that we never saw before, and we go, wow, look at this. Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
It's going to be the same kind of idea. Where'd it come from? Well, not from this planet. Okay, well, it's all good. I mean, we can go about living life as usual, but hopefully a little better than we've been living it now.
Oh, yeah. And I also don't think it's going to be, like some of the movies and TV shows that they have where, all of a sudden these huge ships show up over, like, major metropolitan areas and block out the sun. And, like, I don't think it's going to be, like, that kind of invasion type thing.
Right.
I believe that contact is going to be made, and depending on what sources you look at, contact has already been made, or the public is going to know that, we are not alone within the next year or two. And I think that one of the ways that it could happen is whatever extraterrestrial, whatever, they basically talk to the governments or whatever, and the governments basically have an address, and like the president and prime minister of the world, and they get up and they talk to their people through radio and TV and say, it has come to pass that we are not alone in the universe, and we have been in contact with these beings for the past so-and-so or whatever, and we are going to give them the opportunity to introduce themselves to you in a public venue and whatnot.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think it's going to be that. I think that's a kind of a Hollywood idea.
Too idealistic.
You've got the little phone that they pick up. It's the president. He's calling to tell you to tell the aliens to come out and say hi and wave at the
camera. No. I was thinking about that for, they have the address on like a Monday, and then 2 weeks from there they have they let the whole media things get people ready so that they're not overly freaked out.
I still don't think so. I still think that. I had mentioned that too in the conspiracy theory. I don't think it's like, take me to your leader idea. My belief in what we would perceive as contact is it's going to happen grassroots. It's going to happen guerrilla style. It's going to be this everyday people are going to get messages or get communications or see things or hear things. Or there'll be in our dreams, we'll get communications that say, by the way, we're out here, and if you're not sure, take a look under this rock and you'll see this here, and that'll kind of give you an idea. There'll be things that'll help us substantiate it, but we'll get communications, and it'll be kind of on the down low and on the sly, where right now it might seem a little bit schizophrenic. We'll get more and more of these communications, and more everyday people will be a little more bold in saying, you know what, I've heard this too, I've heard this too, I've heard this too. I don't think it's going to be the TV. It's not going to be the TV. I think TV is, like you mentioned, TV is helping us to acclimatize and get used to the idea through the legends that we tell in movies and television. Mm-hmm. So that when it happens, we're not going to be so freaked out. I think it's going to be a little bit more like that. I don't think it's going to be the V type of idea.
Yeah.
We've come because you guys are delicious. I don't think it's going to be that kind of thing.
To serve man.
Right. I like that.
Pulling out a Twilight Zone episode, I think. Or was that Outer Limits? I don't remember.
It was The Simpsons, how to cook
No. I'm talking about the original black and white 1950s, 1960s episode where I think it was a Twilight Zone, where aliens, you know, come down and, you know, make themselves known, and they basically want to start a whole moving people from Earth to their planet, and they gave us a book. The government's trying to translate it, and it taking, you know, a couple weeks. And then all of a sudden, they got the first part of it, and it says to serve man. Oh, well, that's kind of cool. And then they continue going through and translating it, and all of a sudden they realize a few weeks later, like, this is a recipe book.
Oh, very clever.
And that's where The Simpsons got it from. Is that whole episode is from there? And I'm just like, that is one of the, you know, penultimate awesomest episodes. If you've never seen it and you don't know the basis of it, the first time you watch, it's like, oh wow, yeah, this is kind of cool for aliens. And, you know, the people are excited, like, yeah, we get to go to a different world and everything, and they're going to take care of us, and they're helping us take care of people here, and they're helping. It's all just wonderful, and it's becoming great. And we have people getting on flying saucers like they get on airplanes, and then all of a sudden you realize it's a recipe book, and, you know, the main character's like, you know, his love interest is like, he's just like, don't go. It's a recipe book. And the moment, you know, one of them overhears it, you know, it's kind of like they found us out. It's like, all right, you're all our cattle now.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to be nice anymore.
I'm not seeing that. See, I really think it's more the idea of entities from other parts of the solar system or galaxy or dimensions or whatever are just going to say, by the way, we're letting you know that you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna stay out of your business. We'll help you if you ask for it, but we're not gonna do anything otherwise. We're just gonna play a non-interference. We're gonna do a little prime directive kind of business, and you guys just carry on. You know, we're just letting you know we're here. And if you can do something good with that information, maybe it could make you feel a little better about ourselves. And maybe they'll share the idea that, hey, you know, you guys are really creating your own reality. We're just going to remind you, because you haven't figured it out yet. We're just letting you know you create your own reality. So carry on. I think it's going to be more of that kind of idea. There's no agenda there.
Kind of like a universal postcard, like, hey, guys, wish you were here. Oh, by the way, we exist.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, like a universal postcard, like a little, you know, hey, just here we are, just letting you know. You know, do with it what you will.
I like that. I like that idea a lot. I think I can go in with that, or, you know, a number of different other areas. This has definitely been a very very interesting episode, and like we were talking about before we started, you know, why hadn't we covered this episode before?
I like our twist on it. It wasn't the standard business, so I thought it was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, me too, definitely. David and I would like to definitely take an opportunity to thank all of our listeners. And all, if this is your first episode, hopefully you enjoyed it. If you're a longtime listener, then hopefully we're keeping you interested and informed and entertained and all in one. Oh, and just to let you know, you can find links to my website and David's blogs on our main website of TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com.
For Take the Red Pill, this is David Deer. Wishing you well, and hug an alien if you see one.
Roswell! This is Ronald Dalton.
Ronald Dalton, I like that.
This is Donald Dalton. Remember Roswell.